Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, February 18th, 2020. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Jim Dye's column, Marvin Gerstein, that's G-E-R-S-T-E-I-N, a man of many mysteries. Local lawyer, who died Monday at age 79, made friends, enemies alike. And there's a nice, looks like an older black and white photograph provided by the News Gazette file photo of Marvin Gerstein, and it looks like he's at a podium with microphones in front of a judge. The death this week of longtime lawyer Marvin Gerstein closes a chapter in the history of the Champaign County Bar. What kind of chapter is impossible to say. Mr. Gerstein played multiple roles, including that of lawyer, court jester, Peck's bad boy and rebel, with and without causes, and sometimes even without a clue. To say that Mr. Gerstein was a bull who carried his own china shop around with him hardly does justice to his colorful, combative, comic, and sometimes self-defeating style. After all, how many other local lawyers had their confrontations with the state's lawyer disciplinary panel chronicled in the pages of the Wall Street Journal? If you cross the line with me, you get both barrels, Mr. Gerstein told the Journal, by way of explanation for why he often wrote insulting letters to opposing parties that eventually led to sanctions, including suspension of his law license. Mr. Gerstein was no less emphatic, in disguising his whatever you've got, I'm against it style with the News Gazette. I'm never contrite. Contrite is not in my vocabulary, he boasted. Mr. Gerstein, who was 79, died at about 7 a.m. Monday at a Champaign rehabilitation facility where he was in hospice care. Although he had been in failing health, Mr. Gerstein was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer about a week ago and refused any treatment options. Urbana lawyer Roger Prilliman, a friend for 40 years, said Mr. Gerstein was dismayed by the diagnosis, but resigned to his fate. Prilliman described Mr. Gerstein as many things to many people, a description that aptly covers the waterfront for someone who inspired a wide range of reactions about his approach to life. He was a dear friend to me. We called him Uncle Marvin in our family, said Prilliman, who acknowledged the two had a love-annoyance relationship. Prilliman said Mr. Gerstein was born February 27, 1940, in Chicago, and ultimately graduated with a degree in accounting from the University of Illinois. Prilliman recalled that Mr. Gerstein told him he had worked as an accountant for a major corporation for a couple of years and didn't like it. Then he enrolled in law school at DePaul. After graduating, Mr. Gerstein joined the Peace Corps, living in Panama, Prilliman said. Then he moved back to Chicago, where he worked as a criminal defense and legal aid lawyer. From there, he moved to Greece before coming to Champaign-Urbana to lead the U of I's Student Legal Services program. Finally, Mr. Gerstein opened his own law firm, building a reputation as a solid lawyer who zealously represented his clients and went out of his way to pick fights with those who crossed him while crossing his path. While many of his associates and fellow lawyers wrote off his ill-conceived behaviors as just Marvin being Marvin, those who were targets of his broadsides sometimes felt intense anger and sought redress. The office of former Champaign County State's Attorney, James Burgess, won a felony conviction against Mr. Gerstein for intimidation in the early to mid-1970s. It seems Mr. Gerstein, who was representing a client in a dispute with a local landlord, called the landlord, and, becoming incensed, left threats of violence on the landlord's answering machine. A 2004 news story noted that Mr. Gerstein operated in a target-rich environment. His letters, which were, among other things, insulting, profane, and condescending, were sent to members of the Urbana City Council, with whom he was fighting over his yard maintenance, or lack of it. He once drew the attention of authorities in Georgia, who decided they needed to find out if Mr. Gerstein posed a danger to their governor. It seems that Mr. Gerstein, enraged over an issue long since forgotten, wrote a nasty letter suggesting, in his usual profane and comedic manner, that the governor would have to get substantially more intelligent just to become a dumbbell. Mr. Gerstein dismissed his letters as harmless fun, repeating the phrase that sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That unrealistic viewpoint proved to be his downfall on more than one occasion. More recently, Mr. Gerstein fell on hard financial times. Champagne lawyer Mark Lipton recalled that his close friend was trying to get by on $600 a month Social Security checks. Why so low? Lipton speculated that Mr. Gerstein may have been less than diligent in paying his Social Security taxes. At one point, Lipton hosted a 2015 fundraiser to help Mr. Gerstein. It was a festive affair at Bunny's Tavern in Urbana, one that drew an eclectic collection of guests that included friends and fellow lawyers, as well as U.S. Judge Michael McCuskey and State Appeals Court Justice Robert Steigman. The event raised roughly $20,000. Of course, one cannot think of Mr. Gerstein and his misadventures without asking why. He was an iconoclast, but to what end? Only Mr. Gerstein really knows. The best one can say about him is that he made friends, sometimes turned enemies into friends, fought hard for his clients, and went out of his way to make enemies that he kept. Lipton told one story that indicated Mr. Gerstein's varied impact. Last October, he said he went to a seminar at the U of I Law School that concerned the importance of maintaining civility among lawyers who are involved in contentious litigation. Slides 41 through 47 of the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission seminar were devoted to Mr. Gerstein's various misbehaviors that drew official attention. At the same time, however, Lipton recalled that lawyers from the ARDC also participated in the fundraiser for Mr. Gerstein, giving him in jest a certificate describing him as the ARDC's favorite miscreant lawyer. They even contributed to the fundraiser, Lipton recalled. There's also on this back page of the News Gazette a picture in color in the center of the page. Underneath it's a caption. Judge Roger B. Weber, left, and attorney Keith Froehling, right, connect with retired attorney Marvin Gerstein at the 2016 Law Day Banquet at the Champaign Country Club. And Mr. Gerstein is in the middle. He's wearing a suit. It's all gray, no tie, and a gray beret tipped over to the side of his face and glasses. And the picture is by Bridget Broyelhan for the News Gazette. The next headline reads, Illini basketball. Fretting Illini. Should fans be worried? A team that couldn't lose in January is 0 for February heading into tonight's road date with Penn State. Time to start panicking about a seventh straight Selection Sunday with the Illini nowhere to be found in the NCAA tournament bracket. The consensus among national college basketball experts is an emphatic no. On Monday, editor Jeff D'Alessio asked six of them how worried Illini fans should be on a scale of 1, no sweat, to 10, utterly terrified. 0, says Jay Billis. The current slide is likely a temporary speed bump, ESPN's Jay Billis says. If Ayo Dosunmu comes back healthy, the Illini will make the field and be a threat to win. No more than 3. The fact the Illini are sitting on 3 road wins against opponents in the top 35 of the NCAA's net ranking system is a major plus for their case, says Sporting News columnist and BTN analyst Mike DeCourcy. That they have games remaining against both Nebraska and Northwestern provides the opportunity to gain wins to dress up their record, although they'll have to play well to win both. Number three, unless Dosunmu is expected to miss significant time, says CBS bracketologist Jerry Palm. 3.5. Yes, they have lost 4 in a row, but they have 16 wins and are 8-6 in the Big Ten, ESPN's Dick Vitale says. If they finish 0.500 in such a tough league with a number of quality wins, Brad Underwood's team will be dancing for the first time since 2013. 5. Beating Michigan, Purdue twice, and Wisconsin helps, but a win over Penn State would end any debate, Fox Sports bracketologist Howie Schwab says. If they lost out, it would be a problem, but that won't happen. And 6, Illinois' non-conference profile is quite pedestrian, and just 4 wins over projected tournament teams might not be enough if the current slide doesn't subside, said CBS's Clark Kellogg. Also, Pier 1 bankruptcy. Champagne store in clear for now. Pier 1 announced it has filed for Chapter 11 protection and is pursuing a sale of the company. The Champagne store at 2001 North Prospect Avenue will remain open, though the retailer has set in motion the closing of hundreds of other locations. That brief article was written by Deborah Pressey. The next headline reads, Champagne high-rises. City developer working on deal for sewer upgrade. New $550,000 agreement would expand it to former CAMS block. This article is written by Ben Sigderman and is based out of Champaign. With sewers built in the 1900s and rapid development in the past decade, Champaign is seeking a cost-sharing agreement to expand a sewer to the new high-rise going in at 6th and Daniel Streets. The City Council will vote Tuesday on a $550,000 agreement to reimburse Core Spaces for the sewer extension and other infrastructure upgrades. This is a block of Campustown that was sorely in need of improvement, said Bruce Knight, the city's planning and development director. That block used to be home to the popular bar CAMS, as well as an Espresso Royale coffee shop, Subway, a short-lived Fernando's brick-and-mortar location, home of Gourmet Chinese and the former CO Daniels Bar. Core is planning to replace that with a 12-story structure featuring commercial space on the first floor, 2 floors of office space occupied by the University of Illinois, and residential on the upper floors, according to the staff report. The sewers along Green Street were originally built in the 1900s, according to the city. And when Green Street was rebuilt starting in 2001, they were lined to give them additional life. Starting in 2009 with the development of 309 East Green Street, the University District has seen a significant influx of high-density, high-rise development, a staff report said. The Green Street sewer was not designed to handle the scale and density of development that has occurred in recent years, it said. With the sewer extended from Core's other high-rise project at 6th and Green Streets, it would have capacity for additional projects, Knight said. If there were additional redevelopment in its proximity, it would use the sewer as well, he said. The sewer extension alone is expected to cost about $480,000, and the city would reimburse about $360,000 of that over 6 years. It would also reimburse Core about $105,000 to build a second bump out on the northwest corner of 6th and Daniel. While Core is required to build a bump out on its northeast corner of 6th and Daniel, the other corner is occupied by a church, and it's unclear when additional development there would require a bump out. This agreement would get the bump out built now. That would make the intersection there safer for pedestrians, Knight said. Also under the agreement, the city would also reimburse about $87,000 to Core to improve a small patch of streetscape in front of the campus bookstore that the MCOR project didn't reach. While Core is required to build the streetscape in front of its building, the 1,100 square feet to its east isn't under its purview. Construction of the additional streetscape is not a requirement of the development, but building it now will result in newly improved streetscape along the full block and avoid leaving a small remnant that would be inefficient to address in the future, the staff report said. And now let's take a quick look at our weather forecast for the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Soulier, that's S-O-U-L-J-E, and his column on the weather front. Across the eastern through southern Corn Belt, a shallow snow cover has helped to provide winter wheat with protection from the recent cold wave. In the south, minor to moderate flooding is being observed at well over 100 river gauges, with major flooding occurring in parts of the Tombigbee River Basin and eastern Mississippi and western Alabama. In the Sierra Nevada, accumulating snow has not fallen in nearly a month, leaving the high elevation snowpack less than 60% of average. The 6 to 10 day outlook calls for below normal temperatures across the Midwest and below normal precipitation from the Pacific Coast to the Corn Belt. Today, 37 degrees, mostly cloudy, Northwest wind 10 to 20 miles per hour, gusty. Overnight, partly cloudy and colder. North wind 6 to 12 miles per hour. Wednesday, the high will be 33, the low will be 20. Sunny, north to northeast wind 7 to 14 miles per hour. Overnight, clear, north wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, the high will be 28, the low will be 17. Mostly sunny and cold. Northwest wind 6 to 12 miles per hour. Friday, the high will be 32, the low will be 13. Sunny and cold. Saturday, the high will be 42, the low will be 24. Partly cloudy, windy, and not as cold. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. Of the many auction items, a family trip to Disney, anyone? At Saturday's always lively Mahomet Area Youth Club Banquet at iHotel and Conference Center, the most traveled is a basketball signed by seven former Illini coaches. Last week, it was en route to Norman, Oklahoma, where Lon Kruger was to give it the John Hancock treatment, right next to Brad Underwood, John Gross, Bruce Weber, Bill Self, Lou Henson, and Harv Schmidt. And there's a picture in the paper provided of this kind of large white basketball. Saturday's event, hats off to MAYC, is the primary fundraiser for a club that has been assisting area youth for 26 years. Seats are available and reservations are recommended. For information, please visit mahometyouth.org/auction. And now, history. Area history. In 1920, Miss Catherine Kennard of Champaign, 35, was killed when she was struck by a car as she attempted to cross Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago. Miss Kennard was a delegate to the National Suffrage Convention in Chicago. She was a member of one of Champaign's oldest and most prominent families and was a graduate of the University of Illinois, where she was also a former instructor. In 1970, Champaign citizens would have 2 weeks to air their views on the sale of liquor in restaurants and private clubs on Sundays. The city council was considering an ordinance identical to one approved in Urbana. In 2005, the Georgian, a 27-unit apartment building constructed in 1925 that sat in the middle of the University of Illinois campus for 55 years and had recently been designated as a historic landmark by the Champaign City Council for its distinctive and well-preserved Georgian Revival architectural style, was being sought for demolition by the U of I to make room for a parking deck in the vicinity of 6th and Chalmers Streets, according to U of I officials. International history. Today's highlight. On February 18, 1970, the Chicago Seven defendants were found not guilty of conspiring to incite riots at the 1968 Democratic National Convention. Five were convicted of violating the Anti-Riot Act of 1968. The convictions were later reversed. Also on this date, even further back in time, in 1546, Martin Luther, leader of the Protestant Reformation in Germany, died in Eisleben. In 1564, artist Michelangelo died in Rome. In 1861, Jefferson Davis was sworn in as provisional president of the Confederate States of America in Montgomery, Alabama. In 1885, Mark Twain's Adventures of Huckleberry Finn was published in the U.S. for the first time after being published in Britain and Canada. In 1988, Anthony M. Kennedy was sworn in as an Associate Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. And in 1997, astronauts on the space shuttle Discovery completed their tune-up of the Hubble Space Telescope after 33 hours of spacewalking. The Hubble was then released using the shuttle's crane. The next headline reads, Capital News Illinois Governor's Budget Address, Cost-Cutting Moves at the Forefront. This article is written by Peter Hancock and is based out of Springfield. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker said his administration has already identified $225 million in budget savings for the upcoming fiscal year, and as much as $750 million through the end of his first term. Ahead of Wednesday's annual budget address to the General Assembly, Pritzker tried to draw a sharp contrast between his administration and those of previous governors. In the past, irresponsible management of state revenue and a failure to invest in the long-term health of our state and its people put us in a challenging position, he said. The biggest share of the savings, according to Pritzker's office, came from reduced health care costs for state employees, accounting for $175 million in the upcoming year and an estimated $650 million over the next 3 years. Those are the result of new labor contracts with the administration negotiated with various public employee labor unions. My predecessor treated them with scorn. He belittled their contributions. He aimed to undermine them at every turn, Pritzker said, referring to former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. What he neglected to understand was that when both parties come to the bargaining table in good faith, there's an opportunity for both sides to win. Under those contracts, employees who had gone 4 years without a pay raise will receive cost of living raises of about 11.5% over 8 years. But they will also pick up a greater share of their own health care costs in the form of higher premiums and co-pays. Potential merger ahead. Other efficiencies Pritzker cited included paying down past due medical bills, saving the state $15.7 million in late payment interest costs during the current fiscal year, and an estimated $25 million in the upcoming year. He also cited enhanced tax collections at the Department of Revenue, generating as much as $15 million. Pritzker said he also is exploring consolidating a number of state agencies, merging the Department of Labor and the Department of Employment Security into a single unit, combining anti-fraud units at the Workers' Compensation Commission and the Department of Insurance, and merging the Coroner Training Board with the Department of Public Health. However, representative of the joint employers, which is comprised of the Associated General Contractors of Illinois, Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, Illinois Chamber of Commerce, Illinois Manufacturers Association, Illinois Retail Merchants Association, and the National Federation of Independent Business, said the group is disappointed with the potential consolidation of the Department of Labor and IDES. Such a proposal suggests a lack of understanding of the need for IDES to act as a standalone agency and raises questions about what, if any, benefits would come from a merger, the group said in a statement. Pensions, $10.4 billion. In highlighting those savings, Pritzker appeared to be laying the groundwork for his budget address, which is scheduled for noon on Wednesday. Last week, lawmakers approved a $40 billion spending plan, the largest in state history. But the budget for the upcoming year, which begins July 1st, is expected to be larger because of mandatory increases in school funding and pension contributions. Under a formula lawmakers approved in 2017, state funding for public schools is supposed to increase by at least $350 million. Meanwhile, the state's mandated pension costs, including the cost of paying down pension obligation bonds that were issued in 2003, are scheduled to increase nearly $460 million to a total of $10.4 billion. There's a picture of J.B. Pritzker here in the center of the page. It's provided by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. So remember, Wednesday, you can listen to live Governor J.B. Pritzker's budget address at noon, and you can listen to it on WDWS 1400 AM. That's tomorrow. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit news service operated by the Illinois Press Foundation. Its mission is to provide credible, unbiased coverage of state government to the more than 400 newspapers that are members of the Illinois Press Association. Next headline reads, Inmate Healthcare, SIU Med School to provide care at two prisons. This article is based out of Springfield and is written by the Associated Press. Southern Illinois University School of Medicine will provide health care at two state prisons in a test that could expand statewide and which could provide answers for a troubled $180 million a year program for 40,000 inmates, officials said Monday. SIU aims to have medical teams by summer at prisons in Lincoln and Pinckneyville and to add teams next year at two more lockups in what Dean and Provost Jerry Cruz said is in keeping with the school's mission as well as an economic expansion opportunity. We plan to make a go with this long term. We're pretty confident of success, said Cruz, K-R-U-S-E, adding that he thinks the efficiencies the school can bring to bear can save money. The Illinois Department of Corrections said it's eager to see SIU's impact, but it's unclear how expansion would affect the department's contract with Wexford Health Sources, whose 10-year, $1.4 billion deal expires in 2021. Don DeFrades, executive director of SIU's Office of Correctional Medicine, which was set up to administer the project, said part of the job will be to review current practices and suggest improvements. The next headline reads, Piatt County OKs permit for pot-growing facility. This article is based out of Monticello and is written by Steve Hoffman of the Piatt County Journal-Republican. Piatt County board members voted 4-1 to approve a special use permit for Joshua Cothran and Ronald Falk to construct an indoor cannabis craft-growing facility about 4 miles northwest of Monticello. The 10,000-square-foot building would include about 5,000 square feet for growing. Cothran said the business would have to comply with security guidelines that include a camera system that could be accessed by the Illinois State Police. Cothran added they are not considering dispensary sales at this time. He said the project still needs to be approved by the state, which will hand out 40 licenses on a competitive basis in July. After that, the next round of awards will not likely be announced until 2022. Resident Michael Westjohn spoke out against the permit application. This marijuana issue is dangerous, said Westjohn, who has also spoken out on the issue at Monticello City Council sessions. This is just a disaster in the making, and it's only because of money. I'm just for shutting the whole doggone thing down. I wish our state legislature had not even approved it. And the next headline reads, Maze at the Station, Judicial Candidate Hosting Forum. This article is written by Deborah Pressy and is based out of Champaign. The campaign of Ruth Wyman, who is running for circuit judge, will host a conversation on the impact of the law on the immigrant community. It will be held from 5 to 7:30 p.m., February 27th, at Maze, M-A-I-Z-E, at the station, 100 North Chestnut Street in Champaign. Speakers will include Wyman, who is an attorney, University of Illinois anthropology professor and author Gilberto Rosas, and Urbana independent journalist and activist Brian Dolinar. Those wishing to attend are asked to RSVP to Jill, J-I-L-L-P-Y-R-Z, at gmail.com. And, let me give you a little bit of information about today on WDWS 1400 AM. Tune in for The Morning Show with Judge David Bernthal as he joins J.W. Greer and Dave Gentry at 7:40 AM. Penny for Your Thoughts will air during the 9 AM hour. A visit with News Gazette basketball writer Scott Ritchie in State College, Pennsylvania at 10, and at 10, Chaz Ebert swings by our studios to chat up Ebert Fest. To chime in, you can call 217-356-9397 or text 217-351-5357. Also, on newsgazette.com, Inside Illini Basketball with Scott Ritchie. Illinois is still in the tournament, but riding a four-game losing streak, things are getting a little dicier as far as their NCAA tournament hopes. A win at Penn State would change that. Even if they don't get a win, there are 5 more games in the regular season after that. For our entire menu, visit our website and click on Podcasts. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, February 18th, 2020. Thanks very much for listening, and I'll be back shortly with Part 2 of the News Gazette. Have a wonderful day.